Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Today's Bite Size episode is with Emily. In the conversation I had with Emily, we talked about so many different things, from relationships, health, how we view ourselves in sobriety. But one of the topics that came up was mummy wine culture, and how actually she found the pressure of being at the school gates and the talk of parental stress as a real trigger. She just got sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, as she puts it. And sobriety has completely changed how she views herself. She feels more hopeful, excited now, and absolutely enthused by life. And I'm sure you'll get that from this clip.
You know, I speak to these women at the school gates, and they feel, again, like they've lost their identity, like they're alone, like they, like the parent guilt trap that, you know, that is so easy to fall into. I think it's a big area that isn't really talked about very much, that there is no rule book. And from one minute to the next, you arrive in parenting and you lose your old life, and you lose those connections and the contacts, and you don't know who you are. And then if you already like are partial to a glass of wine, then it turns into a bottle or two bottles of wine a night. So it doesn't surprise me that my drinking escalated as much as it did. It was just really, really hard at that time. And that's it. And that's why when it comes to giving back or helping others, it was all about me when I was drinking. It was all about what's wrong with Emily, what's the world done to Emily, what Emily doesn't have, you know. And so it's just so lovely to be now living in a way that I know that if I look outwards, that's where I'm going to find the joy, you know.
And alcohol is sold as the solution, isn't it? You know, I mean, we are victim of marketing when it comes to mummy wine culture and things like that. So obviously it's taking ownership for our choices, but there is a really strong culture in this country, particularly where mums, the play dates, the school gates, it just was enabling each other, wasn't it?
Totally. And I think even now we've had recent secondary school allocations and stress with all of that. And every parent I speak to is like, oh, thank God for gin. When you're sober, you really hear those comments. But before, that would have been me. That would have been me. I would have been enabling it. And I sought out the wine mums. I sought out the women that drank like me, that wanted to drink two bottles of wine on a Tuesday afternoon. That, you know, because then it normalized it for me or justified my drinking. But yeah, culturally it's still there. I've turned up at the school gates and gone to the supermarket beforehand with a bottle of wine in my handbag and literally wrapped it in a jumper so that it wasn't jangling around in my bag, because I was so paranoid about people hearing it. You know, I mean, I used to turn up and I'd have had a boozy lunch, and I'd be on the polo mints trying to hide the fact, like, oh, do I smell of wine? And looking at other mums who seem to have it all together, saying, well, why aren't I like that? It can be hard, because it's that compare and despair constantly as well with parenting
in life, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. And I used to go for the, you know, the parent picnics, and I'd be like, oh, have I got enough? I'd have a bottle of wine. I'd take a bottle of Prosecco. I'd take four cans of Marks and Spencer's gin and tonics, thinking, oh, well, there'll be enough for everyone. You know, I want to make sure that everyone's drinking as much as I am. But really, people would go and they might have, I don't know, a Budweiser or something. And I'd have this bag of booze, like you say. Like, and when you look back, it's insanity, but you can get caught up in it. It's an easy culture to get caught up in. It really is.
You know, you don't want to come across as being like a total killjoy.
Yeah.
But you see it and you go, well, it's no wonder I thought that was normal.
Exactly.
And then it normalized my drinking, and I knew that it was wrong, but then I was looking at other people and comparing myself and saying, well, it can't be wrong because so and so down the road drinks like me and she's fine. Or like you say, compare and despair, or compare and actually justify your behavior.
Exactly. And I mean, thankfully, I don't know about you, but I really feel that the tide is slowly turning. Maybe it's because I'm not in that drinking world anymore, but there's definitely more people looking at their relationship with alcohol. It was totally normalized. And that link with stress. Oh, being a parent of young children is so stressful. Oh, thank God it's 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I can open that bottle of wine. It was just part of my DNA at that point.
So how did you change it then? You say you shifted it, you lurked on Instagram, you kind of had that background of AA. Then what started to shift for you? Did you just say, right, today's the day and I'm gonna.
Yeah, I did. And actually, it was the 13th of December. So it wasn't even like, right, it's January the 1st. You know, it was Christmas in 2 weeks. I was so sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. It was like an emotional rock bottom for me. I kind of bumbled along the bottom for years. And I'd had sort of a bit of heartbreak around that time, and I couldn't recover from it. I was utterly floored from this breakup, and I obviously drank on it. There was a tiny part of me that knew Emily deserved more and that was capable of more, and that surely there must be more to life than this. There must be. And like I say, I'm, you know, so grateful that I did know someone that was sober. You know, I just sat there and kind of racked my brains and thought, who might be able to help me? Because to be honest, if I hadn't known him, I don't really know where I would have gone initially. But yeah, and then like I say, this time round, when I started to see a whole world of the sober community and seeing people that looked like me, sound like me, you know, as a parent, as a working mum, flourishing in life, I was like, that's what I want. You know, I needed to see that it's not black and white. You're not a rock bottom park bench alcoholic, or you're a normal drinker. And I really informed myself this time round. Like, I've read a lot of the books. I love Alcohol Explained for me was the
Oh,
one.
yeah, William Porter.
You know, and I read that and I thought, you'd have to be a fool, Emily. You'd have to be a complete fool. Aside from all the emotional harm that you're doing to yourself and the fact that you're living hungover or drunk. So I just educated myself, and it was that. And then before I knew it, I did start to reach out to people. I started to post. I started to just experience the bright side of sobriety. Whereas that first time round, it was more about, oh, look what I've wasted all these years, and look where I've ended up, and is this me? But now I'm more of a kind of growth mindset where I'm like, wow, look at me now, and I'm flourishing, and look what's possible, and look at the potential. So that's what's really motivated me this time round, and it's a complete game changer for me.
A whole new world opens up to you. And on day one, you don't see that. You have to ride it out and go through those first weeks. And, you get glimpses and then it gets more and more. And then you feel stronger. And it's a process as long as you're focused on the benefits.
Completely. Those early days, yes, connect and read and listen to as many podcasts as you can. The podcast completely saved me this time around. But just be gentle on yourself and just keep it in the day. Just start to tally up those days, and the days become weeks. And like you say, after a month or so, it's different for everyone, you start to notice these moments where you're like, oh, I feel really peaceful, or oh, how lovely is that sunrise, or oh, I feel really content today. And I remember feeling it, and I was like, what is this? What is this feeling? And then I was like, oh, this is my sobriety. And you start to get those little moments, and then those moments increase the further you move along your journey. And then you start to flourish and expand your own self-worth, and you just have to trust the process, which is really hard for people in the very, very early days. But we wouldn't all be here shouting from the rooftops about the joys of sobriety if it wasn't true.
I think that leads us really, really nicely then onto your first area of your life or thing that you're doing differently in sobriety. What's your number one thing?
Yes. So the first thing that I thought of was how I view myself and the world, really. And I've touched on this already, but today I live feeling hopeful and excited and enthused by life overall. Life still happens, but I feel like there's possibilities and there's opportunities. When I was drinking, I was like living in deficit. My self-esteem was on the floor, my self-worth, that well, there wasn't any. And what I realize now in hindsight, now I am sober and have done some work, is that I just didn't love myself. I didn't love myself when I was drinking. And I felt like I wasn't capable. I would never dare to dream or manifest my future, or because I didn't think I was worthy of it. And the drinking just fueled that negative mindset. I also couldn't really sustain or commit to anything because it interfered with my drinking. It was like this narrative in my head that convinced me that I was pretty worthless, that I wasn't going to achieve anything that I put my mind to, that I wasn't good enough, that I was less than, And also I used external things, obviously alcohol, but shopping, men, attention, anything external or material to get a quick fix of, oh, this is going to make me happy. Something else outside of myself is going to make me happy. And it might have done for 10 minutes or an hour or a week or, but it was short-lived, and I lived in a constant state, as we've mentioned, of compare and despair. I just felt like, why has everyone else got this and they've got it all together? And it's such an unhealthy place to be. And now I'm learning to know my own worth in my sobriety. And to believe in myself and to believe that anything is possible for me. And my self-esteem and my confidence is rising because I can look back and go, wow, you stopped drinking alcohol, Emily. And in the depths of my drinking, nobody would have believed it. I was flying the flag for let's have a drink on a Tuesday afternoon. I was the enabler. I was Emily the drinker. And so, for me to have done it from myself, made that decision, just that in itself has raised my self-esteem. And then it spirals into other areas of my life. And I also show myself now compassion and for things that have happened in the past and for things in life now as well. But I'm learning to show myself love and respect, really. And that impacts me, it impacts my children, and it impacts all the possibilities moving forward for me. And things like self-care. On the surface, when I was drinking, I think, I'd get my nails done now and again. And to the outside world, I was, functioning and everything's great. But actually, talking about health and doctors and things like that, I was so far down the list of priorities. If it came to health, if it came to finances, anything, I put myself at the bottom of the rung. And now I am learning to put myself up there. I am creeping up, and it's work in progress, but I'm creeping up there because I know that if I put myself and my sobriety first, then everything else will be first class. That for me is such a huge benefit of my sobriety. And the self-care, I mean, I could go on, but things like the exercise and foods, and it feeds into every area of my life and forming new habits and habit stacking, kind of building new skills and learning, going back and studying and realizing that after 25 years I can write an essay. And actually, I'm quite good at it.
That's
And all
so
those li
cool.
yeah, those little things are actually massive.
If you'd like to listen to the whole episode, then head back to the 30th of April, episode 18 with Emily. If you'd like to find out more about working with me, then head to my website, louisaevans.com. I don't just support with sobriety, I also help with many other areas, including anxiety, overthinking, and low mood. On the website, you'll find lots of resources, including my online Sober Resilience course, and if you use the code RESILIENCE544 as a Sober Rebel listener, you'll get a 30% discount. And also a range of hypnosis recordings. Use code SOBERREBEL, all one word, to buy one, get one free. Self-hypnosis is a very powerful and effective way to begin to reprogram how we automatically think about things. You'll find a range of different topics on my website. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests on the Sober Rebel podcast for sharing their story and for taking the time to talk to me. The Sober Rebel podcast will be back very soon. I'm just currently recording some fantastic episodes to share with you. I hope you have a good day.